Once more onto the breach, dear friend.
Yeah, let's close the wall up with our English dead. Some days the breach is bigger than the others.
I think we already did close up the wall with the English dead.
Yes, when we showed up this morning, whatever happened during law talk, they set booby traps for us because everything, all the computers
well,
shut
was a
down
computer
before
guy
we got
here.
Here.
He put bugs and viruses.
The Russians and the Iranians got involved here somewhere.
The Iranians?
Yeah, it's a radioactive country. No, wait, that's not it.
Oh, okay. Whatever you say. I'm, you know, certainly don't want to argue with you on this, that the Iranians are here. Anyway, you are listening to The First and Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And it certainly is an adventure in old-fashioned radio, what we're doing here.
Yes. The old board that we have in here, we were discussing this as we walked in. Before all of the gross computer failures, the old board is the same board that you operated or
well,
something
also
like
had,
it.
It also had a failure in the middle of all this,
right,
by the way.
In the 1960s. So then we have cutting-edge computer software plugged into it, and this cutting-edge computer software, I mean,
wait
it is pushing...
No, that's...
It is pushing the edge of technology of the year 1999.
I don't know if it's that far. I would call it early Windows technology,
right.
But...
yeah, I believe that may be XP as the operating system.
I don't know that it's that modern, actually. Yeah. I think it... You know, it may be something...
Windows 3.11
could
over
be.
There.
I don't know. It's well, at least it's large. And that's a plus.
I think that's what Olive Oil said about Bluto.
Oh, boy.
At least he's large.
Yeah, that's... anyway, this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and we... the phone system appears to work.
Yeah.
Although I notice that there's a new...
That's for the new.
Oh, that's for
the new old television.
Man,
here.
That is. Somebody has been. You know, I think we need to call the Smithsonian to
right.
see if somebody has if they're missing any electronic equipment.
There's a television in here that looks like its screen is about 8 inches, and it appears to be about 20 inches deep as far as the.
I would venture to say that again. That one works with the computers.
Right.
It's back from the last century.
I think if we plugged anything else in this room, the whole thing would shut. Maybe that's what happened. Maybe I came in and my cell phone, which is a relatively new cell phone, started interacting with the old software and it just shut down. I said, nope.
It could be. It's entirely possible. Anyway, this is the Personal Wealth Coach. We are not solely, and not only, a radio program. We are a radio program. No, it is a radio program.
Sort of.
We are the...
Programmees.
I guess we could be.
Programmers.
We're the talking voices.
Can a voice actually talk?
I think so.
Anyway, the Personal Wealth Coach is also an SEC-registered investment advisory firm based out of Salado, Texas.
Yes. All that stuff. And the guy you're listening to right now is Jeff McClure, and the other guy over there is... And he's Jeff McClure, is CFP after his name. And this other guy has CIMA after his name.
And that's Jake McClure.
That's Jake. Yep.
We're both bald. It's really hard to tell us apart on that. But his beard is white. Jeff's beard is white. My beard is dark brown. It's got some white in it. So that should help you tell us apart.
Right. Now, normally he wears plaid. I don't know if you could call that plaid. You'd have to really stretch your imagination.
Yeah, it's plaid. It's got multiple colors.
And I wear plain. And I am wearing plain today. I'm wearing a plain khaki shirt. You can also tell us because I'm the guy wearing the plain khaki shirt.
Do you have mustard or ketchup or anything on there?
No.
So it is
no.
completely plain.
Right. It's freshly pressed and cleaned and it's in really good shape. But if you'd like to call in and ask us some questions about anything to do, now, very limited area.
Economics.
The economy, the world political situation.
Finance.
Finance or your investments, we'd love to be able to talk about that. Do not ask us any questions about organized or disorganized sports activities because we don't know anything about them.
I find it interesting. This is one of those two countries separated by a common language issue. In Britain, they don't say sports. They say sport.
Mm-hmm. And they say nil.
Right, and they say nil. But while they say sport instead of sports, mm-hmm. when we say math,
They say maths.
Maths, yes. So because we it's mathematics is what the long term is.
Right.
And they took the first four letters of mathematics, so did we. And then they took the last letter as well. So they just stick
well, they
that
took
S
the
in the end.
Well, it's kind of like up in New England where they drop R's from random letters.
Right,
you know?
Pock the ka.
But then they put them back on to other words that don't have R's on the
like
end of them.
Washington, D.C.
Well, I don't know if they say Washington. Well,
people further south in the Carolinas say Washington. So I think that the northerners actually just export their R's down into the Carolinas.
Could be.
Do they?
But I think they actually have words. They go, ah, at the end of the word, and they put the R's that they took off the other words back on these other words. I don't know which words they are right now. But they actually have words that they, like they say riva, but they don't put the R on the end of it.
Right.
And I'm trying to remember because John Kennedy did the same thing, and I can't remember. But they stick R's on the end of random words that have vowels on the end of it because they have these R's left over, and they have to do something with them.
Hmm. I think there's a physical principle here. It's something about
it's the conservation of R's.
Conservation of R's, yeah. It's somewhere in Newton.
Yeah, it's, you know, the conservation of mass, energy, and R's.
R's, yes. Yeah. And the variable for R is actually just an R.
Right. And you notice that we only have in the United States a single hospital.
Yes.
Even though we have a...
We're going to hospital, is what they say
in
Britain.
Here we say we're going to the hospital.
Right.
There's
Britain,
only one.
In Britain, they say hospital.
Yes.
We're going to hospital.
And we say the hospital, which means that we really only have one hospital that secretly is all the hospitals
dun,
is really
dun,
just
dun.
One hospital.
Right. And it seems like both of us are wrong here, and it should be we're going to a hospital in both cases, but instead they say we're going to hospital, and we say we're going to hospital.
And they talk about going to university, and we talk about going to the university.
Now, this actually is...
I actually understand where that came from.
This is something that, believe it or not, as rambling and weird as it sounds, this is a perfect segue into something that I wanted to talk about.
Mm.
And that is...
Does that make it relevant just because you want to talk about it?
It better be relevant because I want to talk about it. Otherwise, I wouldn't talk about it.
Well, I know it's relative.
Relatively speaking, yes. Wait. So as far as what I was talking about before I was so unrudely interrupted, I wanted to talk about social consciousness.
And, oh, boy.
And by that, I don't mean save the trees. I don't mean the conscience. I mean conscious, as in not unconscious, as in not Jiminy Cricket, but awareness. And one of the things that I'm often interested in is the, and this is something I've been studying for many years, the naming habits of our societies. This started because my name is Jake, fully first named is Jacob. And growing up, I was the only Jacob that I knew for the first probably 18 years of my life.
Yes.
And then for about 10 years, it was in the top three most commonly given name to a child.
That's because we did it.
Well, maybe I set a good example or something. I don't know.
Well, we did it, and everybody noticed that.
Yes.
That,
oh, well, they're doing it over there.
And I did this, and they said, oh, wow, you know, Jeff and Vicky McClure are doing that, so obviously it must be cool.
Right. So I, unlike a lot of people, if your name is John, if your name is Michael, you're used to having people call your name when they're not talking to you. I never developed an immunity, so when I'm walking through a grocery store and I hear an angry woman yelling my name, I react. I turn around. What have I done? What do I need to do? And instead, they're yelling at their child.
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of led me into the there's an actual science in, and believe it or not, it's economic science. It's a part of behavioral economics.
Everything is economics.
Everything is. You're right.
Now, what is it, economics or economics?
Depends on which professor you ask, but they're both going to be sure about it.
Oh. On the other hand.
So
now, wait a minute. If they're economists, they're never sure about anything.
Right. Well, there is a trend here, and I can build some other concepts here. Generally, American names start in Europe, and they go through about a half a generation in Europe before they trickle into the United States.
Really?
So a lot of the technological trends go the other direction. we develop a technology, we've been using it for a bit, and then it trickles over into Europe. And names come very, very interestingly. And for instance, we're looking at, here's a good concept. We're looking at the name Mildred. If Mildred's out there, we think, okay, this is an older style name. Nobody I know is named Mildred. Well, it's one of the top five highest named words out there this right now. When you think of Imogene, Imogene is a very highly named word. Well, Imogene in the South four generations ago was normal. And so I'm talking about the consciousness of a culture. And another way of looking at this is we're pretty well aware of the invention of the telephone. And are you familiar with the what happened with the invention of the telephone?
I know the mythology associated with it fairly well.
Okay, Alexander Graham Bell comes up with this concept.
Watson.
And, right.
Watson, I need you. Or something to that effect.
The invention of the telephone took place in two places within days of each other with people that had not spoken to each other, did not know anyone in common. Alexander Graham Bell has the patent, and that's why we remember him. But the invention took place in the same week elsewhere on the continent. And this is what I mean by social consciousness. A lot of the inventions that take place are really just looking at existing technology and applying them in a new way. So the telephone, on the surface of it, it looks like it's just a random event, two places in the same continent that have no connection to each other, and it's developed at the same time. And we go, wow, how did that happen? Now, to look at that and kind of understand it a little bit more, the consciousness of our culture was moving along. We already had a microphone that we used, and we had speakers that we used, because without a speaker, the microphone's not all that helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So two people decided to put a speaker and a microphone together so that you could talk back and forth. It's kind of what we would think of as an intercom system. And when you think about speaker wire, that little, we're using it here for our headsets, the quarter-inch jack. The reason why the music industry uses that quarter-inch jack that they plug into the big speakers and the microphones and all that stuff is because the telephone companies had so many extra of them. They were, when their switchboards were being operated, and anybody that has any gray in their hair has some at least memory of at least watching a rerun of a show where the operator is unplugging a jack and replugging in a jack to connect two lines.
Why do they call it jack instead of John?
That's a good question. I think Jack is the nickname for John. It's just faster. Wait, no, it's both one syllable.
Anyway, that's
it. Yeah, and where I'm going with this is the social consciousness that we have. There's a book that's been out for quite some time that deals with this kind of directly, guns, germs, and steel.
Mm-hmm.
As a culture gets healthier, it encompasses more cultures. It brings in more cultures. And if you think about...
Which means that the French are really sick.
Exactly. And this one of the ways that you can judge the health of a culture is how inclusive it is versus how exclusive it is of new words. So, and of new music, of new just about everything. And if you think about the Beatles were popular in Britain. But they were much more popular in the United States. The Beatles were a big, you know, they had lots of people liked them in Britain. But when they came to the United States, it was huge. It was the as a percentage of the population, it was a much larger number. It wasn't just the kids. And they brought in different kinds of music. They went to India and they brought in music. Well, that wasn't so popular in Britain, but it was very popular in the United States. That consciousness of the culture has a lot to do with what we're thinking. But if you take that a step further and you think of fashion, we are still pretty Western in the way we think of fashion. If you think of all of the fashions that are out there, and you're making faces over there. If you think of all the fashions that are out there, we're repeating fashions that we've already done.
I was just raising my eyebrows.
Right.
I need the exercise.
I mean, shoulder pads are coming back in for women, and high-waisted pants, and neon colors, and I mean, you go down the list, you can look at, if you go down to Austin, you will see people wearing short pants like the 1920s and suspenders. We're repeating these, and I've talked to people in the fashion industry, and they say, of course we're repeating them. Now it's time that we can look back on this and we can say that was a great thing and let's repeat it. And we run out of fashions if we don't do that. And I laugh at that because that's not true. We're not running out of fashions. I mean, you could wear tinfoil. You could. That's just a slight stretch because there are cloths that look like tinfoil. You could wear a kimono. You could wear an African robe. There are other fashions out there that we're not touching. But the more inclusive our culture is, the more we include things like that. It's not that unusual to see other cultures' garb in ours. And this is part of the reason why a lot of fundamentalist cultures do not like us. Because we are inclusive, because we do take the good things from other cultures and make them part of our own. If you're a fundamentalist culture and all you want to see is your own, and this other culture which is inclusive and it's bringing your pieces of your culture and strengths of what you do into their culture, it's dangerous to who you are. And it happens here in the United States. There's a fundamentalist movement that's, you know, don't let women wear pants. That was going on in the 1960s. And so on. But the more inclusive we are, the stronger our culture is, as long as we keep the values that we've determined. Anyway, I've been monologuing here. You're sitting back and making yourself comfortable.
You have a nice soliloquy going on.
The consciousness of our culture pervades our market as well. When we decide things in the United States, it's based on a different set of information than in the rest of the world. Our tax code is different from everywhere else. Our culture is different. We definitely encourage innovation, and a lot of places don't. By looking at how we see our culture and what our culture expects to be okay, there's a nice little piece of irony that I'll bring up and wrap this up here. Our consciousness has a dichotomy. It has a split in its belief structure, but it's held both sides completely comfortably. One side is that, of course, when we look at Americans, we all tend to kind of look alike, but also that Americans are completely unique, each one of us. But if you look at how we dress, even the people that are dressing in a very extremely weird way, if you go down to Austin, there's a lot of them dressing that way. The people that are working really, really extra hard to be different, all go to the same place to be the same as the other people that are working very, very hard to be different. So even in our weirdness, we tend to follow a regular pattern. So this dichotomy of we're each individual and unique exists at the same time that we understand our culture encompasses it all and we're all kind of the same thing. Anyway, that's useful in decision making, and I realize it doesn't sound like it had a huge point. But if you take the concept in the decisions that you make, it helps in long-term planning quite a lot. All right, that was the end of my great monologue of...
Well,
of...
it's time for commercials. And so why don't we play some commercials, and we'll be back on the other side. Telephone numbers, which I don't think we've given you so far, 773-1400 if you're in East Bell County, if you'd like to talk about something about economy investments or something, 773-1400 in East Bell County, or
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else.
All right. We'll be back after these important words from Town Square sponsors. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And telephone number is near 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
Well, the market occurred last week.
It did.
Yeah, we had a market last week.
Was it a market occurrence?
I think so. And it seems to have done something or another.
Yeah, there was something happened.
Yes. Well, right? If you're following the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and this is one of those things that happens sometimes. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 0.73% for the week, which sounds really impressive. The S&P 500 down 0.9. It really did virtually nothing.
It's back to where it was 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago.
And year to date, the Dow is up a whopping 2.21%, 52 weeks up 9.57. The S&P 500 year to date up 6.45. And up 17 for the 52-week period. Now that's where things started to get interesting. There, the reason I say that is the Dow and the S&P 500 don't do necessarily the same thing in the short term. They tend to do it in the long term. But there's a sense out there that we're in a raging bull market, and as a result of the stocks going up so fast. They're sure to fall sometime in the near future. I hear a lot of people thinking, or were asking me about the danger of stocks falling because they run up so high. Let me say this again. The Dow is up 2% for the year. We're halfway through the year. The Dow is up 2.21%.
More than halfway through the year.
Yeah, but my point is that does not constitute a runaway bull market. Now, the fact that over a 12-month period it's up 9.57%. Well, you know what? If you go back to the beginning of the 20th century, its average annual rate of return is right around 10% a year. So far in the last 12 months, the Dow has been performing pretty much as it's performed for the last century and more. Yet there is a great deal of fear out there that somehow stocks are overpriced and we're due for them to come down and bad things are going to happen because stocks have run up so much. Well,
it's not really the case.
No. to put it in a very simple term, no. We have a pretty solid economic recovery underway. More solid now appearing than we've seen any time recently. Unemployment is down to 6.1%. There's a lot of good news in the economy. The stock market is reacting in semi-fear. By the way, the slight decline in the market this week was a couple of things. One, finally, the traders on Wall Street have realized it's July. And in July, the market is supposed to decline, so they finally got around to selling in July and going on vacation. I guess a few of them did or something. The other thing was a little bit of a fear over a bank, the Holy Spirit Bank of Portugal. You think I'm kidding?
Oh, I
Espirito Santo is Holy Spirit. So the Holy Spirit Bank of Lisbon didn't get into any trouble at all. It has adequate reserves. It has been very carefully audited and found to have no problems. Therefore, everybody's scared. Now, if that didn't confuse you. Actually, 25% of that bank is owned by a closely held corporation indirectly. It gets bitter. Which is also called the Espirito Santo Corporation, the Holy Spirit Corporation. And it is run by a peculiar family that have had certain ties to less than savory organizations from time to time. And they failed to make an interest payment. In other words, that the holding company that owns half of the holding company that owns 25% of this bank missed an interest payment, and as a result, markets all over Europe for the week went down, sometimes substantially. Here in the United States, markets dipped a little bit, which gives you some idea of how thick the fear is out there. The idea that a closely held corporation that happens to own 25% of a major bank failed to make an interest payment, causing markets, the worldwide markets, to dip, is a strong indicator. And the strong indicator is that we're paranoid. Good thing.
Yes. Paranoia is kind of nice when it comes to banks.
A bull market climbs a wall of paranoia.
Wall of worry. Yeah.
No. This is Jeff McClure. I'm not quoting anybody. A wall of paranoia.
You're paraphrasing.
Yes, I'm paraphrasing. So I put, well, it's more than para. I just say a bull market climbs a wall of paranoia. When during the times that we have bull markets of this nature, it is paranoia, not, I mean, you could call it worry, but it is fear of things that aren't there.
Right.
That causes bull markets to work really, really well.
So what you're saying is paranoia strikes deep.
Into your heart it will creep.
Whoa, okay.
There's a man with a gun over there telling you you've got to beware. Sounds like the Tea Party. Anyway.
Well, you know, it could be the...
The man who certainly... Yeah, it would be...
Could be the Transportation Safety Administration. Could be a lot of things.
I haven't seen them carrying guns.
Oh, they have guns.
I haven't seen
them. I've seen a lot of guns in TSA. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they would set the metal detectors off. Anyway. So what we've got is a market that continues, by our measure, to be undervalued. We've seen earnings rise more this year than the market, which is a really, really, really healthy thing to see. I know that sounds crazy. It means the market is a little more undervalued now than it was at the beginning of the year because corporate earnings have risen faster than the market. The unemployment rate is dropping. Employment is rising. There's a tremendous amount of positives out there. There's this real tendency by the mass of investors to ignore those positives out of an emotional attachment to disaster that is very, very unlikely to happen. Now, on the other hand, when people are doing that, and this is one of those strange things about periods of time in which people are afraid of the broad market, when they're afraid of the traditional way of investing. There's a company out there called Cynic.
That makes sense. You're paranoid or cynical.
There's a company out there called Cynic, which, you know, it's kind of like Madoff. You really don't want to invest in a company whose name is C-Y-N-K.
I don't know. There's some cynical ideas. I don't know what the company is.
Well, it has zero assets, no revenue, and one employee.
No. Yeah.
Okay?
So why are we talking about it?
Well, because it went from nothing to $6 billion valuation in just a couple of, since mid-June.
That employee's not got a whole lot of problem with job security, I would think.
I think they might, because the SEC shut trading down in the company because there were indications that the stock was being manipulated.
What indication could there possibly be?
I don't know.
You're talking about that massive valuation from nothing in a very short period of time. I mean, what possible?
See, Cynic shares did not trade for a month, and on June 17th, suddenly jumped from 6 cents to $2.25.
All right.
And it just so happens, and I'm sure it was coincidental, that stock promoters on Twitter were raving about the stock, saying it keeps surging higher and this could be Epic 3. And as a result, people apparently were being talked into buying this new social media technology company that
wasn't really in anything,
with its
actually
one employee and no assets. And
then
it went up to $14.71 on Wednesday. I mean, it went from 6 cents
to $14
in June to $14.71 on Wednesday when the SEC shut it down.
So there was no actual news on any new technology or anything like that coming out.
No.
It was just, oh, well, there's a 6 cents company. We'll just make it 14 and make a lot of money.
On Thursday, before the SEC shut it down, there were 386,000 shares traded on the this is one of those things that I would strongly recommend watching out for. If somebody contacts you with some grand opportunity or some wonderful opportunity to make money because nobody except you and the person who's on the phone or sends you the email or the letter or tweets you on the twit and Twitter. I mean, you would have to twit if you're on Twitter, right?
So I plead.
Each of those messages would be a twit, wouldn't it?
Pleading ignorance here. I may not be ignorant, but I plead it anyway.
And well, I think that, and I really hesitate since I actually have some people who I respect and who I communicate with regularly who apparently do. I have referred to the people who use Twitter as twits, and they seem to not think that's a good thing to.
You have a son and I have a brother who has tens of thousands of twit followers.
They're all a bunch of twits.
Yes, and we don't dabble in that world.
No.
I wouldn't go so far as to call them all a bunch of twits.
Well, now,
but they do. If they twit, then they are twitters.
Yes, you got it. So to twit or not to twit, that is the question, whether it's nobler. Never mind. The issue, now, Cynic is a Nevada-based company with a business address in Belize City. Belize.
Okay.
But it's a Nevada-based company.
In Belize.
That if you want to write to them, you have to write to Belize. And they're publicly traded in the United States, or was.
So what is suspicious about that?
I don't know. I mean, apparently the SEC determined that the address in its regulatory filing doesn't exist.
Well, that's a good way.
I don't know. I mean,
you can avoid paying property taxes.
You got it.
That way.
I mean,
you don't have to have an address. You just make one up.
Has a virtual non-address, see? And
so the reason why you're bringing this up is a pretty good reason, I think.
Because the scams are multiplying out there, folks, and there's a couple of ways they're multiplying.
I wouldn't even say that. I would say they always multiply, but right now with new kinds of technology to reach people, they are. They're flourishing in places where they wouldn't have before. It would have had to be letters or cold calls, but now with the
that's part of it. And the
internet, it's a lot easier to get to people.
The other side of it is that the 10-year Treasury note, which represents the baseline for interest-bearing, longer-term investments, securities, loans, and everything else. The interest rate on that thing is 2.56% per year, which is about the same as inflation is running right now, officially. Actually, inflation is running a little less than that, but the last couple of months it's indicated it's running around 2.5%. So this is my point. When safe interest rates are this low and people believe sincerely that they need to have interest rates and they have to live off the interest and, quote, not touch the principal, end quote, they are subject, and if you're in that position, you are subject to being scammed legally or illegally very easily. There is a tremendous amount of reaching for higher yield investments right now, higher yield bonds. For instance, high yield, which we used to refer to as junk.
I still do refer to them as junk. I forget about this used to. High yield equates to junk.
And high yield is 5%. I'm serious. 5% interest on the average high yield bond out there, which is junk bond, which is carries a pretty fair chance by definition of defaulting at some point in the future. It's only at 5%. So if somebody comes along and offers you 7% or something similar over an extended period of time, there's a tendency to jump on it, particularly if they say it's guaranteed. And there's anywhere you find, and this is a really clear rule. If junk bonds have interest rates of 5%, and on junk bonds there are high probability that a significant percentage of those junk bonds will not reach maturity, they will just fold. And you can hope you jump out before they fold, but that's a high risk proposition. Anything that is offering that rate of return, that not return, that rate of interest, is by definition at the same risk level as a junk bond. Now, again, they're called high yield now. They're not called junk. But what happens is during time periods like we've had for the last several years when higher interest, higher risk bonds have not had a lot of defaults. They're called high yield. When, and they go through these periods suddenly without much warning, when they have a high quantity of defaults, they suddenly become junk again. So they swing back and forth when, depending on what generation of people are advertising them at that particular
right.
moment.
Right.
So the issue is that there's ways to get income if you're in retirement. There's ways to get income in a lot of places that make a lot of sense, but they are not simple. And they are not risk-free. You just have to determine what kind of risk. The danger right now, and there is a big danger out there in the marketplace, is people who offer you either get-rich-quick schemes, such as Cynic, or a high interest rate, relatively speaking, in which they say there is no risk, and try to convince you there is no risk. Those are the two big dangers. Good diversified portfolio, the kind of returns I was just talking about are not at all unusual, but you accept market risk when you do so.
Right.
Well, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and it's time to us to do some more commercials, and we'll be back on the other side. Telephone numbers in here are still the same, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we'll be back.
I'm John.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. About 10 minutes remaining in this, the first hour. We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Well, that was the Censorship Bureau.
Was that the NSA?
Statement of a lot of bad words that had to be
covered up with. Well, okay, now.
Beeping. Or either that or they hung up.
Ed, in the previous hour, was talking about Lynn Woolley. And how much he endorses the Lynn Woolley Show, who apparently broadcasts out of his office. I didn't know that until I heard him say it. However, Lynn will not like the next thing I'm going to say. So, Lynn, if you're listening, turn your radio off really quickly so you don't get stressed out. In the month of June, the United States government posted a $70.5 billion budget surplus.
What? Wait a minute. A surplus in June? How is that possible?
The federal government is on track for the lowest full-year deficit since 2008.
Which is not really a great thing, because 2008 they were saying, this is a massive record of deficit.
But since then,
we've had bigger records.
This is an interesting point. If we go back to Ronald Reagan, which Dick Cheney famously quoted and did say, I found it, that deficits don't matter. Reagan taught us that. The Reagan era deficits were around $200 billion a year.
Right.
And were considered to be good for the economy. But this was in the 1980s. Well, we've had a little inflation since then.
Yes.
So we could literally, and you're going to think this is a little strange, we could literally be running, that is the equivalent in today's money, of something approaching a $1 trillion a year deficit. $200 billion, you only have to have it multiply five times.
Yeah, and it's doubling, it's less than that.
So what we have, you know, 200 to 400, in other words, what happened, and the deficit this year is on track, and is forecast by the Congressional Budget Office to be $416 billion,
uh-huh.
which is a lower deficit than Ronald Reagan ran in any year of his presidency.
Well, we've talked about this in the past. We've talked about Ronald Reagan running those deficits to win the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't happen during his presidency, but the one following. But that deficit running to win a war makes sense. We're not winning a war right now. We're not trying to win. I mean, we have a war going, and I don't want to forget the folks in Iraq right now, because that's still going on. But our budget for that has been dropping. The deficit that we're running has a lot more to do with entitlements than it does to do with
it has a
new spending on military or technology or infrastructure.
We could afford to pay for the entitlements. but as long as we didn't pay for anything else.
Right. That's exactly what I mean.
Well, and the other thing is that during Ronald Reagan's presidency, the tax revenues as a percentage of GDP were quite a bit higher. If you look at the total revenues as a percentage of GDP, they were between 5 and 10%. In other words, taxes were higher under Reagan than they are today. But the good news, the good side of the news on this is that tax revenues were up dramatically. That's one of the biggest reasons that the deficit is coming down. Government spending has risen 1% this year, but taxes have gone up. The tax revenues, not taxes, but tax revenues have gone up 13%. So we're actually doing pretty well this year.
Right. And actually, the federal government should be thanking Texas quite a lot. A lot.
They should?
A lot. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Part of Obamacare, part of the Affordable Care Act, depending on which side of the aisle you are, it seems like the Democrats are accepting Obamacare a lot more, and it seems like the Tea Party is going back to calling it the Affordable Care Act. It's just,
you know why? Because they suddenly realize it may work, and if it works, and his name is attached to it forever?
Yeah, so the concept of going
on... That would be absolutely fascinating to me if that occurs.
The taxes being collected around that law.
Mm-hmm.
There was an extra tax on higher income people,
right.
An extra tax
right.
on capital gains, little bits of this is
only
that.
For higher income people. Yeah.
Right. And a lowered deduction, a lowered amount that you could take as a deduction if you have medical expenses.
Mm-hmm.
That money went somewhere.
It did?
Oh, yeah. It went to the government. It's pretty nice. It was intended by the federal government to go to the states to help cover the Medicaid and the...
Right.
And the
but some states refused the money.
Exchange markets, right. So Texas refused the money. And whether or not it was rightly done is up for debate. I think long term we had strings attached to the money and there was no definition in 5 years where that money was going to come from. Right now it would have been free, but anytime the federal government gives a state free money, there's strings attached. So Texas is, in the past has been pretty good about refusing that sort of thing. So they refused it this time, which means that there are some definite budget problems for the lowest income people getting health insurance. However, it means that the federal government has a lot of money that it didn't expect to have. Because it expected to pay that out to the states. And Texas was a pretty good contributor to that fund. So I think we all should pat ourselves on the back for
right.
allowing the government.
Yes. Yeah, because we have higher medical premiums than other states do. And we should pat ourselves on the back.
Not only do we have higher medical premiums, we also have the same taxes that everybody else is paying higher. We're just not getting it back. So
right.
we're doing it twice with the higher medical premiums.
But we're doing it on good principle.
Yeah, good principle.
Yes.
Send it back.
Yes.
But anyway, that. So when you think about the surplus for the year, pat yourself on the back because you're a part of that.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
How you guys doing today? Great.
I think we're okay.
I think so.
Are we live or dead?
We are live.
I think you're live.
Great.
Now, we
great.
Could be dead and
I'm
not know it.
Too.
Okay.
Hey, I got two questions and then I'm going to hang up because I've never gotten a straight answer to either one.
Uh-oh.
First, what is the net worth of we the people?
A bunch.
Do you want the technical term? Because that would be the
now,
bunch.
That's not a good answer.
Oh, well,
we'll
actually,
give you a straight answer.
There is
the
a straight answer.
The next thing is there such thing as a balance sheet for the federal government? Because I've never seen one.
No, there's not really a balance sheet. You can make one. Let me answer you the second question first while Jake looks up the exact number of the. And it's a. You have
well, it's
to
not
going to
be exact.
Well, you have to look really hard because the first number you're going to come up with is a small number, but that's not accurate. I've looked for it, and it's.
Oh, yeah.
It's
I have a number.
It's got to be a gigantic.
It is. It is gigantic. What number did you find, Jake?
Well, the beginning it says 188 trillion, but this is old data. This
yeah,
is
well,
from 2008.
But that I have found that before. That's
it's
what
incorrect.
I call that's the low number. It's like
oh well, I got that in my hip pocket.
It's like no,
yeah,
seriously,
we're talking more like 540 trillion.
Yeah, it's
$540 trillion.
$540 trillion. And I think that's, I think that even is on the low side. Okay? So half of whatever, what's after a trillion?
Quadrillion.
Okay, so roughly half a quadrillion.
16 trillion or
yeah,
but, billion or whatever.
What is what? The debt?
So they're talking about we're going to go bankrupt and the country is worth $500 trillion.
Right. Well,
we're not going bankrupt.
That's, I know that.
We're about out of time for the hour, unfortunately. We'll talk about this more. Yeah, if you want to call back next hour, it'd be great. But we are, if you'd like to contact us off the air, you can reach us voicemail 947-1111 or 800-914-PLAN. You can email us at Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com. Or you can go to our webpage and contact us or listen to podcasts at thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. Until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
Truth. It's not just a word on your Fox News station. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.